This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieberg. Good morning, afternoon, evening to all of you, dear listeners. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Peter. So last week we had an episode with Praveen from India, and we have a lot of new friends and new listeners from India and all around the world. It was impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
They're very hungry to learn more about industrial AI when it comes to use cases, et cetera, et cetera. I got a lot of messages via LinkedIn. Can you share more insights? And I said, yeah, listen through 300 episodes of the Industrial AI podcast, and then you're done.
I'm going to be using the word, or I didn't use, but I'm going to just repeat it later on, offshoring. I mean, we've been doing in Europe, I guess, in the United States, that's a topic I'm going to be talking about quickly later, a lot of at least software, in this case, software offshoring. And there was always this thought that the Indian people had some kind of IT gene, right? Or let's say programming gene, which is maybe not a way of what you say, this huge interest. Of course, they're a huge country. Biggest democracy, I guess, in the world, 1.x billion people.
Biggest democracy, right? Exactly. And everybody is into AI now. So it was very impressive to see that. It was a very interesting episode, Plant GPT. We already met Praveen, I think, at the Hannover Messe trade fair show.
We did very quickly. Yeah, we were moderating and I went there together with Boris, only 5 minutes because we had to be back again. Yeah, very impressive. I mean, again, we'll talk about it later, not in detail. Agents, everybody talking agents, and they are providing agentic AI in the industrial environment. So.
Exactly. What else do you have, Peter?
I have a couple of tidbits, really. No big news. And by the way, I'm not sure why, but LinkedIn has been serving me news, which has been like a month old for a couple of days now. So I'm not sure if it's an algorithmic problem or if there is not really big thing. I saw Andre, right, Kapati had this YouTube video, Software 3.0. It's really a confirmation, but it's always very nice to listen to him. He was confirming what we got, you know, I guess 2 years ago, a shitstorm, right? So he confirms number one was coding, which is, you know, many people have been doing for, I guess, 50 years, just coding whatever you did, Fortran, Pascal, C, Python these days, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then number two, that was kind of interesting that he makes a differentiation. He talks about weights, right? Weights of the neural network. And he says the number three, that's why software 3.0, he says they are the prompts. So they are the large language models, and which is what he has been calling vibe coding, right? Vibing. Many people have been saying, I've been saying, but maybe he was probably before English as the new language, right? So that was one. As I say, just a couple of tidbits. Rainer Brehm, CEO of Factory Automation Siemens, he also has a YouTube video, short one. He introduces the Industrial Co-Pilot on AWS.
On AWS. Yeah, I was surprised.
Oh, you saw that as well. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You were surprised? Well, yeah. Yeah, I can't comment. We cannot. I mean, I must also say there's another message from Siemens. And of course, many of you know when you start our podcast, you know that Siemens is our partner, but we don't choose. I do not, and I'm sure that you do not, Robert. We don't choose them. We share the messages as they come. So you were a bit surprised. Maybe me too, because at least they had announced something similar on Azure, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's perfectly fine too.
I have a funny quote from Guillaume Mioto from Bayer. Bayer is a chemical company, a pharmaceutical company in Germany. I think everybody knows Bayer for aspirin, the pharmaceutical stuff. And the quote is very funny. He said, "The hardest part of artificial intelligence is installing NVIDIA drivers and CUDA libraries."
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah. It's a really very, very, very interesting, very interesting.
We should invite him. He needs to tell us more.
Most certainly. He should explain us how difficult it is to install the drivers. Yeah, the drivers I wouldn't have thought of because I don't do that daily. But of course, CUDA we talked about a lot. And I'm still not completely certain. Okay, there is one other topic which is related. I've seen all these messages about AMD, right? I'm not capable of going into the details, and it's not really important, I guess. I can only share that, of course, my 10 years with the company, which is not doing that good these days, Intel, that was at that time impossible to imagine. Now we are in a complete new business, the business of AI, the business of chips that in the past were graphics chips, all about matrix calculations. Then it was always very easily saying, okay, AI is all about probabilities, it's all about matrix calculations as well. I think these days they are a little bit more than just that. I think the AI chips are not necessarily one-to-one the same as were a couple of years back, or even today, the graphics chips, which people use to play games and stuff. And then there's AMD. So I can't go into the details, but I've seen loads and loads of announcements. And there, that's what maybe I would like to talk about again some point in time with our friend from AMD, remind me.
Jens is our friend.
Jens, there you go. Exactly. We had Jens when 3-4 years ago.
But he's now responsible for the whole research stuff, I think, at AMD.
There you go. Maybe he can tell us sometime, because I do want to understand how they are thinking of breaking the market that NVIDIA has, which is equal to CUDA, right? I mean, so one thing is producing chips, you know, produce them yourself, have them produce whatever, and then you can have the same capability for a similar price. Or if you're, you know, attacking a market, you should have a better price. But the point is, you need to deliver it in CUDA, or you need to start something completely new, right? So that's what I'm not completely certain of. Would be very interested in.
Yes, we should invite him. So we have two new guests.
There you go.
The guy from Bayer and Jens. We will get in contact with you to record an episode on the topics. What else do you have, Peter?
And the other thing, again, Siemens CTO Peter Körte, board member. We had Peter on the show a year or two ago. He shared an article on why adaptive production is the future. And in it, he announced this MIT initiative for new manufacturing. So they've been a partner for a long time. Siemens is a founding partner. And it's about next generation production, of course, AI-powered manufacturing, etc. But I think the second bit, which is a lot more interesting, it's called here workforce development. Rebuilding industrial strengths in the United States, specifically following decades of industrial offshoring. There is the term I mentioned at the beginning, and I think we referred to it a couple of times at the very beginning when we started. It was about OPC at the time, and we went to Japan at that time, also United States. There's the quote from our colleague who at that time said, he was just confirming, you know, if the US wants to be in competition, specifically in manufacture, they will need to first do exactly what they're talking about now. They need to, you know, restart manufacturing, basically, which is what, without needing to go into the politics of it, at least that's a goal.
But that's the goal, yeah.
Yeah, and having said that, there was an article somewhere, and sometimes I do not read them, but I see the headlines about...
Oh, that's dangerous, Peter. That's dangerous. Only read the headlines is very dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes.
Can be. Well, anyway, I'm going to share it anyway because it was about Apple, Apple having their, I guess, iPhones and all the other great things they do. Apple, we can talk about as well if we want to. And could they at all, I mean, within the political environment, could they at all have their iPhones produced in the United States? That was the question. And I believe I did actually start reading it until the point where I think I understood it, because the answer of the person who was writing it was obviously no. And again, I don't want to get into the politics of these things. That's not the point. But here we see a company, Siemens, together with MIT, looking into, well, how can they within the United States, I assume, very strongly as anywhere else with AI-powered manufacturing, come back and do the production if that's what they want to do.
You already mentioned the USA, and I have a short interview with Felix Müller about his AI challenges with the FDA. And I want to share it now with our listeners in the news part, because in the main part, Richard Zocher is waiting. But let's listen 5 minutes to Felix about his problems with the FDA and his AI challenges. It's very interesting. So please listen to Felix. My guest is now Felix Georg Müller from Plus 10. We already recorded an episode on highly regulated environments and AI solutions. And today we discuss the topic, what happens in the moment when it comes to highly regulated environments, when it comes to FDA regulation, when it comes to the whole situation in the US. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so we had a very interesting and fascinating talk on that last week in London at the Global ISP conference. And we are also co-authoring the ISPE guidelines on AI usage and incremental learning, what we are doing actually in pharma and medtech. And yeah, at the moment, it's quite complicated. There's a lot of technology development on the one hand, and on the other hand, is no answer on the FDA side.
What does it mean, no answer on the FDA side?
There's, like everybody knows, the administration is basically restructuring the organization of also the FDA. And for example, my contact person at the FDA was laid off. So I have no contact at the moment to discuss those topics anymore.
What does it mean?
So basically, it's only the authority side, but we still keep on working on the guidelines. So how to basically qualify incremental learning and dynamic learning systems in pharma and medtech. So the guidelines are still keep on evolving. But yeah, the authority point of view is then still missing, which is for sure quite a high risk that at some point somebody will say, hey, I would do it different, or I don't accept. I think one of the key points we're always discussing is critical thinking. What can people think by themselves and what is basically not able to be understood? Yeah, so the opinion from the authority side is still missing from the US side at the moment.
But it is a huge problem, right?
So we will see how long that will take, this restructuring process. But yes, for sure, at the moment, it's quite a lack of input, I would say. And hopefully it only takes some months and then we have some transparency again. But yeah, that creates uncertainty, first of all.
Are you still in contact with the FDA, or do you have no person you can contact?
Basically, there's always somebody you can contact, but we as a software supplier, we are basically rather working on the regulation side and trying to contribute to guidelines and best practice examples. And therefore, we still have contacts for sure. And people working with us, especially on the association side, like ISPE, that's the Global Pharma Engineering Society. But yeah, there's, let's say, a lack of contact persons rather from authority.
How do your customers react to this situation?
I don't have transparency on the discussions between my customers and FDAs.
But they also have this problem, right?
I guess they have the problems. I don't have feedback on that point. But I think the main problem at the moment is that there's this high uncertainty. What is basically, from an AI perspective, allowed at the moment and what is not, and how to proceed and how to validate AI systems in production, new ones that are coming up, emerging, like life learning systems that have no design freeze.
Okay. What is on your agenda for the next 3, 4, 5 months, Felix? Please share some technical stuff you want to implement, some updates, some new models, some ideas. Share with the listeners.
from the technology roadmap, for sure, we keep on proceeding our incremental learning path. So basically,
I recommend the episode we did together with Zaransky.
Right. Yeah, there we had a bit of deep dive on that. Yeah, and that's basically what we're enhancing at the moment and make it self-explainable and GMP compliant at the end. That is basically not a fixed term. It's basically evolving this term because people change opinions and detail their opinions. So we always have to follow up discussion. That's why it's at the moment super critical to be involved in this negotiation and discussion with regulatory authorities to know what is basically their opinion and what they think they would allow at the moment and also the next months. And that's a continuous also technology development coming out of this discussion.
Thanks, Felix. It was a pleasure. We already talked about Felix's problem that there is no FDA agent who can confirm the AI processes in the medical environment there. It's very difficult if there are people missing and if there are people not available to certify AI processes. So certification is a crucial part when it comes to AI and also in the US and when it comes to critical environments. Yeah, very interesting what Felix reported at the AI with Purpose Summit by Siemens.
Yeah, most certainly. And of course, certification is a global thing. We, you know, being based in Germany, we have kind of been brought up with certification. It is the way. I mean, that's the way that people from around the world see the German engineer, you know, quote unquote, right? Which there is all this certification. We have the thing that we call the TÜV, and maybe even people from around the world have heard about the TÜV, which is the certification institution. We have a couple of other ones, and I think they are actually huge international organizations. So many of you listeners from wherever you are will have heard about them. And because from this perspective, we are so strongly, you know, we need to always make sure that everything is 100% certain. And if not, we need to run another cycle and another cycle. That is then the relative disadvantage, of course, because in the meantime, you know, in other parts of the world where they first put things onto the market, right? As is.
But I spoke to a Bosch manager a few weeks ago, and he said that the Chinese want even more certification than the European or the US. And maybe there is a new world champion on the horizon when it comes to certification. They have this international certification, and then they have local certifications. So let's see what's happening in China. Because I was very surprised. I met him at the, it was not a few weeks ago. It was in December, I think, last year at the SICK Safety Forum or Safety Summit or something. And I should invite him because it was very interesting about this whole certification stuff. So three new guests.
Very good. And then I thought you were going to maybe, there's a fourth one. I'm not sure you are, but there was another thing I read about Audi as building the most advanced AI factory. And there was a quote from Gerd Walker. He's Audi's board member for production logistics. So I'm not sure that you were going to go for him and ask him. I am going after the company that has been involved in this Cisco, which we know, from the perspective of internet communication, I guess, right? Is that the right way to put it? And they share a document based on experience with Audi, and it's about AI-ready industrial network for manufacturing. You know, I think it's all about the virtual PCs, basically. Maybe that's the very core center of what this is. I recall that I asked Boris when we were in Hanover, because I had somehow missed the fact that Siemens had introduced the virtual PLCs.
Oh, Peter.
I'm just an honest guy, you know, I've missed it, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think, and maybe then, you know, Audi is one of the first companies to jump on this very idea of the virtual PC, which I recall we talked about it. That must have been in Stuttgart, must have been maybe 15 years ago. The very idea of having a PLC somewhere in the cloud, and what can you then do with it? You know, if there's going to be a glitch in between wherever your cloud or your IT center is based, which is, again, of course, another topic we had, everybody wanting to build the NVIDIA-based factories, AI factories in Europe. So I asked the person from Cisco, let's see if he's going to confirm. And then the other thing is, of course, I'm not going to go into the details, but agents.
Exactly. I remember a discussion with Professor Bauerhansel from Fraunhofer in Stuttgart, and I think that was also 10 years ago, and he presented the vision of what you call a virtual PLC, and everybody in the audience said, oh, wow, this is wow.
This is wow, yeah.
And now it's becoming reality. But I recorded an episode with Matthias Meyer from Audi about welding. So this is a use case where they use an old LSTM for their analyzed welding spot.
Okay. Yeah. And the topic, of course, was, and I guess still is, or that's the central question I will be asking, is like, you know, how can you make sure you have going to have deterministic communication between wherever you're virtual PLC is? I mean, is it if it's just outside of your factory because you have a...
No, I think it's a big, huge rack next to the shop floor, I think.
Yeah, it could be. And if that is the case, then that's, I think, what I recall we talked about 10, 15 years ago, it was about the virtual PLC in the cloud, right? That was the idea. Now, and if the cloud is wherever you are, somewhere, you know, your factory floor and your hardware is whatever, 100 kilometers or 500 kilometers, miles away, you know, there's a certain chance of a glitch in the communication. The same way that you and I have when we do the podcast and we tell the opposite person, oh, it doesn't matter if there's a glitch because we record locally. It's almost this very topic, right? But then if the PLC, the virtual PLC 500 kilometers away would be making the decisions and is not part of the deterministic communication between the factory and itself, then. So for that reason, you may be correct that that's what's typically happened. You, instead of having them dispersed over the factory floor, you concentrate them in a whatever you call it, you know, a small...
Server
or a big server.
Big server. But you don't need to build gray boxes anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's the topic. Yes. Maybe you need, maybe you're building one big box.
One big box.
Instead of 100 small boxes. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, Peter, what else do you have?
That's it for my side. Just tell us who we're going to be listening to today.
No, we need to talk about next week because we are celebrating an anniversary and we still need to come up with something. Do you have any ideas what to do next week? I'm not sure.
What anniversary are we having? It's something with a
300 episodes. I'm not sure because normally we have some
special.
Yeah, we need to think about, we still have 1 week.
Think about
we still need to think about that.
Yeah, we're going to think about what if you, dear listener, have any idea how we may want to go about our 300th podcast anniversary next week, please share with us.
Exactly. And now let's move on to the main part because Richard Zocker is waiting there. And I record the episode at the AI with Purpose Summit hosted by Siemens. And it was a very interesting discussion with Richard because he has a different perspective when it comes to industrial AI. And we talked a little bit more about common AI and technology when it comes to AI technology and what he is seeing on the horizon. And it was very interesting.
Yes, the U.com platform, right?
Yeah, the U.com platform was one topic, but I didn't want to stress the company so much because talked a little bit more about technology.
Yeah, I saw his presentation he did. And I recall that I had one question in the book, 100 Questions About AI 5 years ago. The book that was 5 years too early. I recall that I did refer to Richard because he was with Salesforce at that time?
He was with Salesforce, yeah. He's a former Salesforce. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was doing this economics simulation with reinforcement.
Time series
very
models.
Interesting. And it was something like a SimCity, you know. It brought me back to my son a long time ago, you know, sitting in front of the PC doing SimCity, building a city, and he was kind of simulating the economics of who earns what and can you kind of even it up with with reinforcement learning, which I assume, because I didn't hear yet, you are not talking about, but I'm very much looking forward to listen to what you did talk about with Richard Soha.
Yeah, we talk about, I can spoil a little bit, are LLMs the new operating systems when it comes to AI? So that was one question at the end.
Oh, okay. Well, that's at least what Andrei Karpathy confirmed already in his YouTube. So I'm very much looking forward to hear what Richard is saying.
Perfect. Peter, next week, 300 episode, and next week, AI in the Alps. So we are fully...
Probably a nice combination, actually. Maybe that is our solution for...
Exactly. Maybe that's the solution. Yeah.
Robert, have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Peter. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Richard, what brings you to the topic of industrial AI? I thought you are more in the field of, let's say, sales, financial topics. What about industrial AI now?
U.com works for any kind of knowledge worker, and there are a lot of knowledge workers in industrial applications too. We have Siemens, we have other consultants here also, and we have a lot of German customers.
Yeah, so Vogt Ultrasonic, a traditional mid-sized company, is a customer. Analog Devices is a customer. Can you think of any other application? Are you going into the field of engineering, going on the shop floor solutions or co-pilots? What is your aim?
We mostly do knowledge work automation, so answers agents, AGI, for knowledge work. But even industrial companies have sales, service, marketing, ops, recruiting, HR, strategy teams, consultant teams, analysts, especially financial analysts too, that work with us, consultants. We have a lot of individual consultants, and soon also consulting partnerships we'll be able to announce. And so that is common across different industries, but we're not planning to be like physical AI at
U.com
in the shop floor. It's a very exciting trend. I'm all for it. It's just, you know, as a company, we can't do everything.
Okay, because you have not the domain knowledge. Is this the crucial thing when you want to go into the physical AI world?
You definitely want, it's just a focus question, you know, as a startup, you just can't do all the things. And we are the sort of data connection for private and public data and searching over that data and then giving you answers over that data. So we can't also do like physical robots and things like that. Just a focus. Yeah.
Are we reaching the end of scaling in the area of LLMs?
I do think there are diminishing returns. You do need a better, more clever algorithms again. You may need to explore simulations and verification steps versus just trying to 10x the data again. Also, some of the best LLMs have captured most of the data on the internet already.
Really? It's empty.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always new stuff. You will always need to stay up to date. And if there's a new president, you probably want to update the vectors and things like that, and the embeddings. And so we are actually providing RAG solutions also to other LLM companies, both consumer and enterprise.
When it comes to data, you mentioned data. We recorded an episode, I think, 3-5 weeks ago with Jakub Tomczak. He's for Zuckerberg Initiative. And he said when he talks to VCs in the USA, the first question is now, do you have the data? So they do not ask the startups if you have the best model. Do you have the data? Is this a shift in the US market? First, talk now about the data.
I think a lot of folks are thinking about what the moats are. And indeed, algorithmic moats don't last very long, generally. We see this with open source now, you know, like a lot of value kind of dissipated into the ether for like the two very large closed source modeling companies. And so as you can see more competition, then you look at, okay, where are the moats? Where is it harder for a competitor to copy your capabilities? And that's usually connected to some kind of data and can be hard to access public data. Like we offer some customers access to LinkedIn, for instance, like and have search over that kind of data, all the publicly available stuff that's on the public web, but on LinkedIn and hard to get to. But the most exciting data is private data. And so we also do private retrieval augmented generation and searching over company internal data and then connect it wherever helpful and necessary in a secure way to other public information that we can feed into the same answer.
But is there a shift in the US focusing more on data to get the right data? Domain-specific data?
I don't think there has been, like, this has been like ongoing for several years already for a lot of investors. It's just that like some investors maybe now only realize it. You know, in many cases, the future is already here, just not equally distributed.
Okay, let's look a little bit into the future of LLMs. And will LLMs become, let's call it, the basic technology in enterprise sector as a operating system, and you build your AI models on the LLM? So it's the most, the interface, it's the operating system for enterprise solutions?
I think the LLM might be the CPU, but you still need the RAM and the hard drive and Ethernet connection and so on. So LLMs are just one piece of that. But to make them accurate, you have to connect them to the right data sets and both internal on your quote-unquote hard drive in the analogy. You need to connect them to the internet, so the Ethernet connection, that analogy, and have good search over that, which is something that we provide, like web search for LLMs. You need to then connect and pull the right information into your RAM, which is kind of the prompt of an LLM. So the operating system needs to be built around the LLM, the LLM itself.
So we talk about Gen AI systems.
That's right.
Okay. So Gen AI systems are becoming the operating system in the enterprise.
That's right. And you have to basically build all the tooling around it, all the apps on top of that. And then you also have to allow the LLM to use those tools, and then it becomes more agentic, like they can program for you and then run the code.
Agentic is a nice topic, because when we talk about the industrial sector, we have been fighting field bus wars, industrial communication wars, TSN, OPC-UA, Ethernet protocols. Will agent avoid this jungle? And what do you think? Is it a completely new layer on top of traditional communication in the industrial sector?
I think so. I think if it's done well, you can connect an agent to all these different networks and systems. And even agents are trying to unify things now with MCP servers, for instance.
So MCP is for you the standard?
It is a standard, yeah.
It's one standard.
Mm-hmm.
Will we see more standards when it comes to agents?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think hopefully not, but I'm sure there will be more.
Our big topic is foundation models. Foundation model. Everybody talks about foundation models. Who will build these foundation models?
I think a handful of companies will build purely the foundational models. I think they're going to look more and more like telcos, you know, high capex, like very costly, unlocks a lot of value, creates a lot of value, but necessarily not, does not necessarily capture all that value. Like, you can't have the Uber app without Verizon or T-Mobile, but they don't get money from the Uber app, you know? And so I think similarly, if you're just in that infrastructure layer, the costs and the margins are getting thinner and thinner, because open source can also play. But then you still have infrastructures like electricity and chips that are needed no matter what happens in the layer, the infrastructure layer above. But at this point, it gets easier and easier to have an LLM. At the same time, you know, Anthropic is the preferred model for a lot of programmers, for instance, like Cursor, Windsurf, most users there.
So we will see Anthropic specific models for specific tasks?
That is already what we're seeing at U.com, where we orchestrate. We give you direct access, but most users, like 80% plus of users, just say, give me the right answers. And then we internally orchestrate it. We have our own LLM, but we also can orchestrate the answers to all the other LLMs out there and give you, the day they come out, usually you can play around with them on U.com too.
Everything is based on transformer technology. You mentioned we will see different approaches. Maybe RNNs are coming back, whatever. What is your imagination? What we will see? What kind of different architectures?
You know, in a weird way, I think it actually doesn't matter, in the sense that there's a huge equivalence class of algorithms. Transformers are one example. In fact, the reason the transformer paper was called Attention is All You Need, not we are introducing attention, right? Yeah. Is that even some of my own papers had a lot of attention mechanisms like years before the transformer came out. It's just the interesting bit for them was that they didn't need the recurrent network that us and a lot of other people were still using. And so that was the main innovation. And the nice thing about that is that you can just run it more efficiently on GPUs. And that's been the problem with recurrent and other recursive neural networks. They're just not as efficiently run on current hardware. So in some sense, we're looking for the right algorithms under the street lamp that is current GPUs.
At the end, we always ask our guests, what homework we have to do in the industrial sector when it comes to Europe?
When it comes to Europe in particular, I think having more of a sort of constructively optimistic mindset that this technology can change, because it will, to try on the regulation side to reduce regulations for the technology, try to get cheaper electricity also if you want to get into really large data centers and train really large cutting edge models. And then think about where, you know, like a build versus buy on a lot of fronts. Some of our biggest customers at U.com actually first built their own solutions and then they realized afterwards, man, now it costs more money just to re-embed all our database into a new vector embedding scheme than it would have just to buy u.com in the first place. And so you can sometimes move more quickly if you just use an existing solution. But in some cases, it does make sense to really go in and fine-tune and create your own model. For instance, if you want to build an automation in CAD software and like you have some very complex processes that are nowhere to be found on the internet, then it makes sense to build more custom solutions.
What is on your U.com agenda for the next 6 months?
We're building a productivity engine to give people answers, agents, and a path towards AGI. And that path towards AGI isn't just to throw over some software over the fence and say, hey, like you should all be using this. What we also do is actually train people with role-specific certifications so they understand how to use these models and how to become a manager of AI.
Mm-hmm. Richard, thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.